Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we head into Warren Zevon's wilderness years. Are you guys ready?
Yes, but just let me grab another cup of coffee. I was up really late last night.
Oh, were you watching movies?
Or listening to Negative Approach?
No, I was searching for a heart. All right, Patrick, this is fun hanging out with Hunter this week, don't you think?
It's extremely fun and also extremely enlightening. And if you'll permit me really quick, Jim, if folks are listening to our podcast for the first time, and our podcast is called Rockin' the Suburbs, because you came for the Zevon, which sometimes when we do these special weeks, right, Jim, we get some people that just really love that artist and may not have been aware of what we do. I think you might like our whole podcast. so you should go to suburbspod.com and definitely check us out. You can even find a week when Hunter joined us on a pretty different topic that also was really awesome and in-depth, too.
So there's two things we should mention there in terms of Hunter's past appearances on our show. One would
that's
be
right.
The Hardcore Week.
Yep.
And that was, I have to look at my notes when that was exactly, but I'll find that. But then also, his first appearance on our show was with his band Dot Dash.
Forgot all about that.
They
came
out to the house here, and we did an interview, and we played some games and stuff, and then they played like songs in my family room that we recorded for the show. It was really, really fun.
Gosh, that was a fun night. I remember our good friend Paul Trapp was there too, and a lot of friends in your living room. That was really, really fun. Since we're kind of on this topic and probably embarrassing Hunter with all this, he's also an author and wrote a great book called The Prodigal Rogerson that you guys should look up. That's got some really cool stuff about a certain very intriguing figure in punk rock history. So,
yeah, today is actually the 24th anniversary of the death of Roger Rogerson.
Get out. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. In fact, a guy that I met sort of online because he had read the book sent me what is likely the last ever photo taken of Roger Rogerson.
Really?
Which I posted on my Facebook page. So
very cool.
Yeah.
And while we're on the topic, what's the best way for people to follow you, Hunter, or get in touch with you? What do you prefer as far as how that goes?
You can reach me through Facebook. I am known as H period X Bennett on Facebook. I'm not quite sure why, but, I am, or, you know, if you want to go the old fashioned route, you can, email me. My email address is hunterbennett2000. That's HUNTERBENNETT 2000@yahoo.com. Though from time to time, people email me at work. Like, I'll get emails from someone in Germany, like, hey, I read your book, which I think is awesome. I'm like, you know, anybody that goes and does research and is like, how can I find this dude online?
They looked you up on LinkedIn or something like that, right? Like,
that's awesome.
More power to him.
I just want to follow up on this. The Hardcore Week that we recorded with Hunter, that was last November 2019.
Right.
The Dot Dash stuff was before that, and it seems like ages ago that we were able to get together and record together.
I
when I mentioned like hanging out here at the house and, you know, playing music in the family room, it seems like ages ago, right?
It really does. Yeah. And it even longer when we were at Hunter's lovely home in DC when we recorded Hardcore Week. That seems like
just last November
ago.
Right. Yeah. I know. And so we're recording this all on Zoom. We're in our respective homes, and that's just kind of the way all media is produced these days. All right, let's get into part three of the Warren Zevon Week. Hunter, who's a really big fan of Warren Zevon, he put together this amazing script for us, all these notes, plotted out all the episodes. All we have to do is just kind of chime in with dumb comments, which is perfect for us, don't you think? And the show, as you mentioned, Patrick, is called Rockin' the Suburbs, and my name is Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And then, of course, we have Hunter Bennett here. So, Hunter, take us away. What is in store for the Zevon story, part three?
Well, this episode is titled Episode 3, The Wilderness Years, Part 1. and so last episode ended with the envoy, Warren Zevon's fourth album for Asylum Records, flopping. And so disillusioned, Zevon splits L.A. in 1983 or so, and he moves in with a Philadelphia DJ named Anita Gevinson. And they live in an apartment that overlooks Rittenhouse Square. You know, and as I mentioned, I think on Monday, Warren Zevon was always a guy that got a fair amount of airplay on the radio in Philadelphia. And you know, I think that was due in part to the fact that all the DJs knew him because he lived there.
Yeah.
But while he's there, he mostly stays inside and drinks. And the other interesting thing is that Anita Gevinson is actually a much bigger star than he is at this point. Because in Philadelphia, she's got a call-in show on one of Philadelphia's two rock radio stations, WYSP, and it's called Ask Anita. And so listeners would call in seeking advice, usually in really thick Philadelphia or South Jersey accents, and they would butcher the English language. It would be like, "Yo, Anita, how you doing? It's Nick from Trevo. So I got a question for you about where to buy fresh berries." Although I've been out of Philadelphia for too long. I sort of put a little too much New York in there. So while Zevon is living there, he and Anita have a subscription to Rolling Stone. And so one day he opens it and he reads that he's been dropped from Asylum.
Oh, man.
And it actually drives him to drink even more. You know, and I should say, there is a great article written about sort of his time with Anita Gevinson that came out. It was after he announced he was sick, but before he had died. Hmm. And it came out in Philadelphia Weekly. Philadelphia had Philadelphia City Paper, which I think still exists, and Philadelphia Weekly, which does not. There was a great article. And unfortunately, Philadelphia Weekly, when it folded, for whatever reason, so much of their stuff vanished. So there's like this great Anita Gevinson article. There's a fantastic article about Greg Foreman from the Delta 72, who now plays like keyboards with Cat Power and is just sort of a well-known musician. But it's all about him becoming a heroin addict and sort of overcoming that. That's a great article. And unfortunately, that's just gone too. So hopefully this stuff will pop up again at some point in the future because, you know, both articles are worth reading. But the interesting thing about the Gevinson article is that it's a really candid article. He was at a real low point in his life. And, you know, when he was trying to get sober, she ended up breaking up with him because she was like, you know, I don't really have any interest in being with somebody that's not going to drink with me and not take drugs with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, she got really... Warren Zevon, though he's a cult figure, has a lot of really dedicated fans. And this is probably 2002, 2003. She really like got a lot of heat on the internet to the point where he actually, you know, commented and said, "Look, leave her alone. She's like a really great person. It was a difficult time in my life." Mm-hmm. So that was sort of, you know, it's weird. That was sort of an early instance of like the internet ganging up on somebody that they think has sort of acted inappropriately.
Right. Wow.
But anyway, I digress. You know, Zevon, he's in Philadelphia for a while. It's not going well. But at some point in the mid-80s, a youngish talent manager named Andy Slater decides that he's going to revive Zevon's career. So he has him come down to Athens, Georgia to record some demos with this young band that Slater's been managing called REM. Mm. And so these demos lead to a deal with Virgin Records. You know, finally in March 1986, Zevon actually quits drinking once and for all. And that will stick till he becomes terminally ill, which we'll talk about at the end of the week. So he, Mike Mills, Peter Buck, and Bill Berry record the album in early 1987. The album's called Sentimental Hygiene, and it comes out in August of 1987. It's got a bunch of guest stars on it, too, even beyond REM. It's got Bob Dylan playing on a track, Stan Lynch from the Heartbreakers, Neil Young, Flea is on it, George Clinton is on it. So on this record, Jorge Calderon co-writes a track, and so do Mike Mills, Bill Berry, and Peter Buck. it's hailed as a great record, his sobriety record and his return to form. I don't actually think it's all that great, though it does have some good songs on it. It's got a ballad called Reconsider Me, which is, I think, about Gevinson, and that's, you know, that's a cool song. Bad Karma is also a good song. And then it's got this song, which was co-written by J.D. Souther. It's called Trouble Waiting to Happen.
Woke up this morning and I fell out of bed. Trouble waiting to happen. Should have quit while I was ahead. Trouble waiting to happen. I turn on the news to the Third World War. Open up the paper to World War IV. Just when I thought it was safe to be born. Trouble waiting to happen. Trouble waiting to happen. The mailman brought me the
Okay, Hunter, before you get into that song, I just want to say, when you were saying about this album not all great, I took that to mean it is all great, is what you...
I meant this album. you confused me, Jim.
I just love this record. I had this, maybe it's largely because of the REM connection, I'll admit. I mean, I was so into REM in the 80s. Yeah. And when this, you know, came out, I was like, you know, and I just consumed it over and over. And I also was at the period of time where I listened primarily to music on cassette, you know, because I had a Walkman and I had a car stereo that had a cassette deck. And so when I got a cassette, I just like played the hell out of it. And so I could probably recite all the lyrics to every one of these songs. I just loved it. And but I'll let you speak about it a little more, and then maybe I'll make a couple comments on a couple other songs. So
I acknowledge I may be being unfair to this record. I think part of the problem for me is it starts with Sentimental Hygiene, which is, I think, not a great song, and it's 5 minutes long. And then you get Boom Boom Mancini, which is a better song, but it's 5 minutes long.
Like, I love Boom Boom Mancini.
I'm sort of a simple person in that I like my songs short and sweet.
Well, that's the hardcore in you, yeah. Right? Yes, I get it. I get it. One thing real quickly here, Boom Boom Mancini, and then, you know, you had the Spaceman Lee song before and everything. Warren Zevon, and we'll get to another song later, I think. Warren Zevon, a bit of a sports fan, was not afraid to write songs about what he knew, which apparently was watching sports on TV.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as we've talked about throughout this, also very adept at casting a historical moment and bringing it to life through song. I mean, like Hunter said, going all the way back to, you know, just trading lines about a headless Thompson gunner, you know, being able to vividly imagine that scope and putting it down in song was a gift of his. And, probably a pleasure, too, I would imagine, like you said, Jim, you know, sports-wise, too. So really cool that he could do that. It's a unique thing, I think, about his talent, that he was able to do that. And certainly Boom Boom Mancini is a really interesting song. You know, it's funny. I think I was saying this the other day, or maybe it was on one of our Hootenannies, Jim, but My children are often amazed when we're like watching Jeopardy or playing a game or something, like, Dad, how did you know that? Like, that's the most obscure fact. Oh, it's on a Warren Zevon record. Like, that's where I learned about it. Like, I knew that a guy died, you know, after a fight with Boom Boom Mancini because of Zevon. I didn't know it.
That's,
you know, because I watched the fight. Yeah.
Dooku Kim.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My whole life's education has come through.
That's right.
Through records. Yeah. I mean, but Zevon especially, you know, super entertaining. Taught me Hawaiian. Yeah.
I'll just say this thing real quick about sports songs. You're right. There's not a lot of them in history because it doesn't really make for great material in a song.
Yeah.
It's hard. But I think kind of going back to what Zevon was able to do with other things in life, he was able to find the drama in it,
yeah,
and describe
exactly
the setting and the characters so mm-hmm. well that it worked. I think to him, like, sort of everything he viewed had that. It for it to be interesting to him, it had to have those elements, right? And yep. then he wanted yep. to share that out with
yeah.
people, right?
Recreate that unscripted drama. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Right.
And as we'll hear either tomorrow or the next day, I can't remember which, he also wrote the definitive song about hockey.
I know. I love that song. So we're gonna get to that.
Oh, I know. Okay. We've talked about that, yeah.
All right, let's get back to Hunter and Sentimental Hygiene.
Okay, so the song we heard, Trouble Waiting to Happen, is, you know, a definite high point on the record for me. It's got Brian Setzer playing that kind of cool lead guitar part on there. Mm. And I love the line, you know, about the mailman brought him the Rolling Stone and said he was living at home alone. Like, you know, is that a reference to him opening it up and finding out he had been dropped? Is that a reference right. to the Nelson article? It's got, I read things I didn't even know I'd done, or whatever the line is. Like,
right.
It's just sort of, you know, it's got that to me is sort of classic Warren Zevon sort of worldview and humor, and I really like it.
Totally agree. I also think there's another industry song on here, which is Even a Dog Can Shake Hands, mm-hmm. which I just find to be a really endearing, funny song about just that notion of, you know, of, you know, what does commitment mean? What do contracts mean? What is, yeah. you know, all the people you meet who tell you that they're going to do things for you and they don't come through. Right. And, I just think it's a really sly tune.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was a guy who, you know, by most accounts was a total misanthrope who really seemed to struggle almost with like agoraphobia. So to put him in Los Angeles and to have him, you know, like 80s deal-making yeah. Los Angeles, and to have him have to go out and hustle to right. like get his career going must have been just torture for the guy.
It's so interesting, yeah.
There's some line about worms and gnomes. I remember that in there. Yeah. And then I also really like The Factory.
I think that's Dylan on harmonica.
It is.
If I'm not
it is.
Mistaken.
Dylan plays yeah. harmonica. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward kind of rockabilly-ish kind of song, but there's one part about punching out Chryslers. I don't know. I said,
yeah.
That's just such a like an evocative line to me. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Jim, I'm starting to come around. Maybe I was too harsh. But I mean, part of the problem is like there are so many Zevon albums that I love that there are those that I have to love less.
Yeah, that's fine.
Totally.
The thing I think, though, and maybe it's the sobriety or what have you, but it does feel like a fully formed album. You know, it feels like he mm-hmm. was really focused, you know, on this. And maybe not the last song so much. I know, you know, we won't go there right now. But you know, it feels like a full piece of work here. And then you have the nice glamour shot, you know, cover art, too. Which
yeah, I mean, he looks great on the cover. I mean, you know, it's clearly, you know, not drinking agrees with him because he's like, he looks very healthy.
Yep. Okay.
So, all right. So that's Sentimental Hygiene. That came out in August 87, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so it's then another 2+ years till we get the next Zevon record, which is called Transverse City, which is his cyberpunk record, which was purportedly inspired by the works of William Gibson. Hmm. And this sort of raised the question for me, has anybody ever released a good cyberpunk record? I'm not sure. You know, Billy Idol sort of most famously had his cyberpunk record, you know, and I'm not... I don't know that, and this record, as we'll talk about, you know, has a fair amount of good stuff on it. But I remember reading, again, sort of pre-internet. I think I had a free subscription to LexisNexis when I was in law school, so I could Google articles, and so I remember Googling Transverse City and seeing an interview with Zevon where he said, you know, I asked my mom about this record and she said, I don't really like it. It's not funny, which I thought was a great quote. And it's mostly not funny. So, you know, this album, it doesn't really seem like a Zevon record. It's got the cyberpunk theme, and it's a really weird cover photo where he seems to have teased hair.
Yes.
I don't know what's going on with that. And the other strange thing about this record is the only co-writer on it is someone named Stefan Arngrim, who, according to Wikipedia, is best known for his role as Barry Lockridge on the Irwin Allen television series Land of Giants, which aired from 1968 to 1970. Arngrim, like, there's almost nothing out there about him. And I don't think I reread the Crystal Zevon book before doing this. And I don't think there's any mention of Stefan Arngrim on there. Like, I don't know how Zevon found him or ended up co-writing with him, but he did. There's a lot of sort of synth-heavy, turgid songs on this, like the title track, Transverse City. There's the song Run Straight Down, and They Moved the Moon. Those are sort of not highlights on this record, but this record also features the song Splendid Isolation, which we are about to listen to. And as you're listening, this is Neil Young on the harmony vocal. So, I mean, that song seems to have nothing to do with William Gibson or cyberpunk. It's just about how Warren Zevon's kind of a misanthrope who doesn't want to go outside. It's got the great references to Georgia O'Keeffe and Michael Jackson. That's just a great song. So, there are some other really great songs on there. Turbulence is it's a song about perestroika, yet is remarkably catchy. Networking is also really sort of a clever, upbeat pop song. It's sort of all about computers and uses the terminology in a fun way. That's Stefan Arngrim co-wrote that one. And then, the album closer on this is called Nobody's in Love This Year. And it's a beautiful love song. And this sort of brings me to the point that, like, with one glaring exception, which is Leave My Monkey Alone from Sentimental Hygiene, which is a sort of musical abomination that features Flea and George Clinton. That's the kind of thing that you just sort of attribute it to the 80s. Like, well, yeah. What are you going to do? But the last song on every other Zevon record is always great.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. We did a show on album closing tracks, right, Jim? Not that long ago, and I don't think we talked about Desperados Under the Eaves. So that's right. One that definitely would fit right in there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and again, this record had the usual cavalcade of stars: Jerry Garcia, David Gilmour, Jorma Kaukonen, and Jack Cassidy from Jefferson Airplane and Hot Tuna, and Chick Corea, if you can believe it, of all people. So, but this album didn't do very well, and Zevon ended up getting dropped by Virgin. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, REM have become huge stars, as you mentioned, Jim. And turns out when Zevon was down in Athens recording with REM, I guess when Zevon would ordinarily have been out, drinking and carousing, he wasn't because he was sober. So they would sort of, REM would drink and they would have fun recording sort of goofy covers and blues tunes. So one of those is Raspberry Beret, the Prince song. And so, you know, Irving Azoff, who is, he managed the Eagles and is a very powerful music executive, decides he wants to release some of those covers on his new label, Giant Records, which is a joint venture with Warner Brothers, which is REM's new label. And so Irving Azoff puts out a record of these covers. They call themselves the Hindu Love Gods. And it comes out in October of 1990. And the cover of Raspberry Beret, which is quite good, is a minor hit.
That's
so
right.
Zevon is back in business. Though he's dropped from Virgin, he's now on Giant. And he appears with a solo album called Mr. Bad Example in 1991. In terms of guest stars, there are very few. There's Dwight Yoakam, Tito LaRiva from The Plugs and Cruzados.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sort of a Zevon hardcore overlap there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the studio musicians, Jeff Porcaro, who was also in Toto, and Jim Keltner. And, you know, maybe not coincidentally, in my view, this album, which has very few guest stars, is probably his best record since Excitable Boy.
Mm.
I think the tunes on this are just really great. They're co-writes with Jorge Calderon, who we've talked about before, Leroy P. Marinell, who, of course, co-wrote Excitable Boy and Werewolves of London, and Waddy Wachtel as a co-write as well. So, you know, like I said, there are a bunch of good songs on here. Susie Lightning, Renegade, Angel Dressed in Black. Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead is a better title than it is song. And in fact, it actually inspired a Christopher Walken movie title.
Yeah.
But let's listen to the title track here, Mr. Bad Example.
I started as an older boy, working at the church, learning all my holy moves, doing some research, which led me to a cash box labeled Children's Fund. I'd leave the change and tuck the bills inside my cummerbund. I got a part-time job at my father's carpet store, tackless stripping and housewives by the score. I loaded up their furniture and took it to Spokane and auctioned off every last Naugahyde divan. I'm very well acquainted with the seven deadly sins. I keep a busy schedule trying to fit them in. I'm proud to be a glutton and I don't have time for sloth. I'm greedy and I'm angry and I don't care who I cross. I'm Mr. Bad Example, intruder in the dirt. I like to have a good time and I don't care who gets hurt. I'm Mr. Bad Example, take a look at me. I'll live to be 100 and go down in infamy. Of course I went to law school and took a law degree and counseled all my clients to plead insanity. Then worked in hair replacement, swindling the ball, where very few are chosen.
It's great, man.
That's so funny.
It's polka-ish. It's not quite a full polka, but it's polka-ish.
Yeah. Though it's funny. You're right. It's totally polka, but I was thinking mariachi for some reason.
Yeah, there's that too. Yep. Yep.
But I think you're right. I think it's more polka.
Ish. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't go full on, but it's definitely got the mariachi in there too. Yeah, it definitely does.
It's also kind of Celtic too, in a way.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? So I don't know. It's all those things, but
it's like a Rorschach test.
Yeah, there you go. World music. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a lyrical tour de force. He co-wrote it with Jorge Calderon. And it just, again, you can picture them trading lines and just having, like, you know, cracking each other up as they're going through. But I mean, in terms of, he's got a lot of funny songs, but if you wanted to look at a song that just had humor in it and you know, I think that's probably the funniest song. I mean, the lines, I'm hard pressed to choose between, I love the line, laying tackless stripping and housewives by the score.
Yeah.
That But I think I might give the edge to I worked in hair replacement, swindling the bald, where very few are chosen and fewer still are called.
That is beautiful, man. Swindling the bald.
So yeah, it's a fantastic song and it's hilarious. But again, he's not really giving you a whole lot of insight into Warren Zevon himself.
Yeah.
Unlike,
very true.
You know, then there's this, Searching for a Heart.
Darkness in the morning, shadows overhang, certain individuals aren't sticking to the plan. Searching for a heart, searching everyone. They say love conquers all. You can't start it like a car, you can't stop it with a gun. Leaving it behind, traveling in night, staying inconspicuous. Staying out of sight, and I'm searching for a heart, searching everywhere. They say love conquers all. Can't start it like a car, can't stop it with a gun. They tell me love requires a little
stare. See, yeah, I mean, that's such a great song. The profundity of the line, they say love conquers all. You can't start it like a car. You can't stop it like a gun, or stop it with a gun.
Yes.
I mean, it's such a fantastic line. There's like nothing funny about it. It's, you know, I think the lyrics to the rest of the song are fine. You know, they're good, but they're not remarkable. It's the line and the chorus. It's just, you know, it kind of stops you dead in your tracks.
Yeah.
I remember that being one of David Letterman's favorite lyrics. He would quote it from time to time when Warren Zevon would come on his show. You know, they became really good friends and he would have more a lot and everything. That you can't start it like a car, you can't stop it with a gun. There's a bit of wit to it, right? So first time you hear it, it gives you a little smile or smirk, or whatever. But then I think you're right, Hunter. Like, sort of the more you think about it, the more you're like, damn, that's deep. You know, there's really something to that. It's not just a toss off funny line, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And they use that song really effectively in the movie Grand Canyon, the Lawrence Kasdan movie. You know, it's funny because, again, for a guy who didn't really have many hits, he was hugely influential. His songs appear in so many movies and TV shows. Like, do you guys remember the show Californication, the show with David Duchovny?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they used Warren Zevon's songs all over that show.
Hmm.
He just really, you know, there aren't a whole lot of people out there that love him and his music, but the people that love him and his music really, really love it, and they really want to spread the word about it and sort of force other people to listen to it.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is, Hunter? What is it about him that's so, you know, endearing and makes you like really clutch him to your breast when you find his music?
I think it's just so, I mean, to me, it just really, it speaks to me in a way like I feel like he would understand. He sort of had that thing going where I feel like he seems like somebody that you could have a great dinner with and you could talk about, and he would totally understand everything you were saying and you would have a great time, which I think, you know, as we'll get into on Friday's episode, I think is one of the reasons that the first time I read the Crystal Zevon book, I was like aghast and kind of hated it. I don't think, you know, he was, in a lot of ways, he was a really difficult person, and it probably would have been an awful, uncomfortable dinner, and I probably would have hated me. But I felt, like he would understand. He just seems like a kindred spirit. And I think that is probably the way that other people feel as well.
Absolutely. I can concur with that. Yeah, actually. You could tell him anything and he'd be like, oh, yeah, I've been through that. You know, or I've been through something similar or worse, right? Yeah, absolutely.
So that's Mr. Bad Example. Mr. Bad Example was released on October 15th, 1991. So, of course, nobody gave a shit about it because they were all listening to Nirvana.
Right.
That's just bad timing, but sort of, you know, fitting for Warren Zevon.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the next Warren Zevon album that we're going to talk about. After Mr. Bad Example comes out, there's a relatively long pause between studio albums. There's a live album. It's sort of an acoustic guitar and solo piano live album, Learning to Flinch, which I kind of remember liking, but Robert Christgau, I think, gave it, you know, how you would get a letter grade, or if it was really terrible, he'd give it a bomb.
Yeah, that's right.
He gave this one a bomb, but I don't think it's that bad. In fact, I think I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
So that comes out in 93. And also in 93, he was hired as the musical director of NBC's remake of the 1960s television series Route 66. Hmm. And the remake came out in the fall of 1993 and starred James Wilder of Melrose Place, which my now wife and I watched religiously every Monday night, and Dan Cortez of MTV Sports, who I think is now best known for appearing on Seinfeld in that cameo.
Oh, yeah.
Where George had the man crush on him. Remember? Oh, and he's like, I made sandwiches.
That's right. Step off, George.
Yeah. George accidentally breaks his nose.
That's right.
So anyway, those two guys are on the show Route 66 on NBC, and Warren writes the theme song. So Jim, if we could sort of break longstanding Rock in the Suburbs tradition, I feel like we should play the whole of this one because it is 40 seconds long.
Wow. I'd never heard that.
Me neither. And I had no knowledge of this whatsoever.
Nope.
Before reading Hunter's Notes. This is fascinating.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's called If You Won't Leave Me, I'll Find Somebody Who Will, which is, I mean, in terms of great titles, that is a great title. That's but what right I also there. Love, that song is 40 seconds long on the dot. Because again, they clearly told him, hey, you got 40 seconds to write us a theme song. But it's a complete song.
I know.
It really is.
Yeah. So,
and I love that jangle to it also. Oh, that was unexpected.
Yeah. I don't know if that's an actual 12 string, or whether it's some sort of effect that you put on this guitar, but God, I love that song. It's just perfect. And I love playing that song for people, and everybody I play that song for loves it, or at least they're scared to tell me that they don't love it. So they just go along with it. So, unfortunately, Route 66 was canceled after four episodes, but we'll always have the theme song. So, in the meantime, Warren had amassed a bunch of studio of recording equipment in his apartment. And so he records his next album, The Mutineer, in his apartment, usually late at night. And that's exactly what it sounds like. It's subdued. There's a ton of keyboards, and it sounds kind of like he's trying not to wake up his neighbors. he's got two songs that he co-writes with Carl Hiaasen, another fantastic writer who he has befriended. You know, again, there's some really good songs on here, like the song The Indifference of Heaven is a really good song, though, again, because he recorded in his house, it's a little keyboard heavy. And Piano Fighter is, you know, that's the one that we talked about on the first episode this week that sort of makes reference to his parents getting him the Chickering piano and yeah. and him falling in love with it that way. That would be Stumpy winning it in the poker game. So, again, there's some really good songs on here, but the record is overproduced and Zevon really needed an editor. There aren't many guest stars here. There's Bruce Hornsby and Peter Asher of Peter and Gordon fame. And you sort of wonder, like, were they recruited to play on the album or were they just like, did they drop by to say hello to Zevon? And he was like, hey, guys, you got to come in here and lay these tracks down.
Yeah.
So the song I'd like to play off this is sort of oddly a cover. It's called Jesus Was a Crossmaker, and it was written by Judy Sill, who is sort of a fascinating character that we will talk about after we hear the song.
One time I trusted a stranger, 'cause I heard his sweet song. It was gently enticing, there was something wrong. When I turned, it was gone. Blinding me, his song remains, reminding me he's a bandit and a heartbreaker. My Jesus was a cross maker. Pistol by his side, he's always chasing him out of windows, and he won't give him a place to hide. He keeps his door.
I don't like that. I don't think it's a very good version of the original. Have you guys heard the original?
I have not.
No.
Mm-mm.
So I just think it's a fascinating choice of cover. Judy Sill was a mysterious character. She was a junkie and a criminal, and she's become sort of a cult figure over the last like 20 years or so. In part, I think Jim O'Rourke, the guy who is sometimes in Sonic Youth and has been in a couple other things, I think I may be misremembering, but I think he is really into her. There are a bunch of sort of like indie rock types.
I can
see
that.
Are big Judy Sill fans. Mm-hmm. And she was signed to Asylum in the early 70s. And the song Jesus Was a Crossmaker is actually about J.D. Souther, who, of course, was a friend of Zevon's. So I've done very little sort of a little bit of internet research trying to figure out why Zevon covered the song and whether he knew her, because he almost surely did. But I haven't really found any sort of discussion of it. And Judy Sill, I should also mention, is, again, she's sort of a fascinating figure about whom, you know, as we've talked about in the internet era, it's hard to find people where there aren't just tons of facts out there about them. But there aren't with her. And I keep waiting for some person to write the definitive Judy Sill book, but it just it hasn't happened.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So if you're out there listening and you got some time on your hands and you like sort of doing internet research and want to write a book, please write the Judy Sill book, because I would love to read it.
Yeah, me too.
So anyway, Mutineer comes out in May of 1995, and it is it doesn't do well at all. And so Warren Zevon gets dropped, and he is without a label for the next 5 years, which we will discuss tomorrow in episode 4, The Wilderness Years, part 2.
The wilderness years go on for so long with Warren Zevon that
that's right.
Two parts, yes. Okay, very good. Thanks again, Hunter, for all of this. This meticulous detail down to the
it's fantastic
theme song of the show that lasted 4 episodes. That's just the best.
I feel kind of like if you guys wanted to edit out like all my rambling. If you just played like the 40-second snippet from the theme song, that could be, you know, that could be the sum total of Warren Zevon week, and it would be a triumph.
There you go.
There you go, man. Well, we've been spending a lot of time thinking about jingles lately for different reasons on our podcast. So it's amazing to have a jingle and a theme song pretty much the same thing. So a
lot to learn there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Well, you've already teased tomorrow's episode, so we will just plow into that, right?
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
Excellent.
Okay. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Hunter Bennett.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Hurry on home. Hurry home early. Hurry on home.
Rolling, as they say in the biz.